Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Marketplace Discussions podcast. My name is Mahmoud Resmi, and today's guest is Luis Pereira. Luis lives a dual life. During the day, he helps his family run a traditional offline-first business in Goa, India. And at night, he is a creator on the internet where he builds web applications and publishes the occasional article. He is currently tinkering around with AI and is trying to figure out how to use it in order to build useful things. In this conversation, we discuss his latest application, AudioPen, which uses AI in order to transcribe messy and unstructured voice notes into coherent, structured, and easy to read text. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. If you want to keep up to date with future episodes, make sure to click on the subscribe button. If you have any questions, feel free to drop them in the comments section below if you're on YouTube, or feel free to reach out to me at DecafQuest on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening and hope you have a good day.
Because I mean, I'm from a state called Goa, which is a tiny state on the west coast, and it used to be a Portuguese colony for 450 years, right up to 1961. So even after the British left India, the Portuguese were still ruling in Goa. So a lot of our culture, our religions, you know, traditions, architecture, etc., is very, very influenced by the Portuguese. I confuse people within India who are not from Goa. And when I travel, sometimes I confuse people from other places because they're like, okay, you have an Indian passport, you have an Indian accent. You know, what is this name? Like, are you some drug dealer in disguise? Or like, what's happening? I've had issues at immigration.
God. Yeah, you did. Any
issues
particular...
meaning like, you know, extra questions. Like they send you to this other room. Just last year I had traveled to the US. And I was stopping in New York on my way to South America for a short holiday. And the immigration officials like kept me aside and made me go to this other room and wait for like 20 minutes. And I was just shitting bricks because I had no idea what to do. I've just like landed from India after like a, you know, 17, 18 hour flight. And then they were just like, tell us your real story. Like, where are you from? What are you actually here for? Like, your name sounds like it's South American. You look and, you know, you speak like an Indian. You're coming to America, then you're going to South America, then you're coming back to America, then you're going back to India. Like, what's the deal? Like, you know, tell us the truth. I was like, I had to give them like a history lesson, being like, hey guys, the Portuguese colonized my state. And then within a couple of minutes, they were like, okay, cool. Sounds good. And they let me go. But it's fun in retrospect, not in the moment.
In retrospect, yes. I mean, and those these stories usually stick with you. But I mean, you have a story to tell whenever you're on a podcast like this one as well. So it's quite interesting. But yeah, in the moment, you're like, shit, am I ever going to be leaving, or will they deport me? Just, you know, I mean, your trajectory is also a bit curious. You know, U.S.
Yeah, South exactly.
America, back. Yeah. Exactly. Do you speak the language or not Portuguese?
I don't. So a lot of people in my state do, although it is like a dying sort of language, like less and less people now. So more so the older generation. So like my mom's side of the family does speak it. My dad's side, not so much. And like for us as kids, we've not picked it up.
Interesting. Yeah. That's, I mean, you learn something new every day. So this is it for the podcast. Thank you very much, Luis. And yeah. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this, and going back to like the story of how we met was interesting because you signed up for one of my courses, which I forgot.
Yep.
Was it introduction to philosophy?
It was Stoicism, Introduction to Philosophy and Stoicism.
Yeah. Intro to philosophy.
I don't remember the exact title, but it had like, I did the Stoicism bit and then went on to other things that I didn't end up completing.
I remember
learning a lot in the couple of lectures that I attended, and then life just got in the way. But I do plan on getting back to it at some point.
I mean, thank you very much for also signing up for my course. I cannot remember when that was. Was it summer?
It was one of the earlier ones, man. Like maybe one of the, like
yeah,
the second
like 2 years
one
ago
one.
Almost. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It was just interesting. It was a time in life where, you know, things had kind of slowed down in terms of, you know, the pandemic and everything. And just had a lot going on as well at that point. And I was like, okay, philosophy has always been interesting to me. This was that time where everyone was learning stuff online, and I was really enjoying that whole process of discovering new things or dabbling into, you know, things that I was interested in to see kind of where it would take me. This was just one of those experiments. So thank you for having it.
Did I scare you away?
Not really, man. I think I did a lot for the first couple of weeks. Like there was a lot of like readings. I would print them out and like write stuff down and think about it and stuff. But I think it was like a 4 week thing, if I'm not wrong, 4 or 5 week thing. And then just like something just happened in the middle. I don't remember what.
And it was two sessions. See, this is the thing. These are the early ones, and we're going to be talking about your journey today. But this is part of the iteration process, right? When you start building something, or when you ship a product at first. And then the first course I ever gave was 9 weeks long, 2 hours or twice a week. And then I reduced it to 4 weeks twice a week. And then I reduced it to 4 sessions. So 4 weeks, 1 session a week. And now it's only three.
3 weeks,
I understood
1 session a week?
Exactly. So I consolidated the course, and then, you know, you learn as you go, and then you see what people are interested in.
Have you experimented with like a 1 week, but like 3 sessions in that week?
I have not experimented. I thought about it. But
that might be
interesting.
Because like, for instance, like it's very difficult for me to predict what life will look like in 3 weeks, given the nature of work. And, you know, I mean, the further out, the longer a course takes, the more difficult it is to predict what you'll be up to at the end of it. But if it was like a 1 week thing where you could just say, okay, I have this week, even if it's a snap judgment that, okay, the course is starting tomorrow, looks like a light week, why not learn something? And then just power through. Like intensity when you're learning something new is just generally very high at the start. So why not take advantage of that and just cram everything into like, you know, as small a timeline as possible?
Yeah, I thought about it. Something along the lines of what Daniel does. Like he gives his course over 2 weeks time, three times a week. I did think about it, and I might as well experiment soon. So yeah.
Yeah, even if it's like a mini course, man, might be fun. I'd enroll.
It's not even a mini course. It's just it's like whatever three sessions get together, learn something new quickly, as you said, and then get people interested in these sort of things. And this is where we get the bit where you discuss your journey. But before we even discuss any of that, what's your day like now?
At the moment, it's kind of chaotic, man. So I live like a very dual life. I work with my family business during the day, which is like a completely offline life. We run offline businesses that have nothing to do with the internet. So yeah, like during the daytime, I'm there looking after that. And before work or after work at night, which is like right now, I just build stuff online. At the moment, things are like one of the apps I built called AudioPen is doing quite well. So just keeping up with kind of demand and like building new things there and making sure things don't break and responding to customer emails is quite hectic, to say the least. But I'm loving it, man. It's the first time that a product I've built has had this much traction. So I don't want to complain about the lack of sleep because I would do it again 10 times over.
That was what I was going to ask you about. How many hours of sleep are you getting? And for those who don't know the story, we'll get right into it over the past few weeks, what you did, how you did it, etc. But are you getting any sleep at all? Because I see you, man, all on Twitter, active, like when it's daytime here in Spain and when it's nighttime in Spain. I'm like, this guy is active 24 hours a day. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I do, man. I think for you, what happens is you're a few hours behind me. So you're like, what, 5 hours behind me, I think, Spain and India. So by the time you're awake, I'm already, whatever, up and running. And I sleep quite late nowadays. So yeah, I'm guessing if you're looking at stuff during dinner time, I'll still be active. But yeah, I mean, I get it at least 5 hours. On most days, I get 5 hours. Some days less. Some days
interesting.
Maybe 1 hour more.
Yeah, for those who don't know you, you're a solopreneur, builder, etc. Tell us your story. I've been following you for 2 years now, so quite interesting kind of evolution there.
I mean, so as I said earlier, I live like a completely dual life. During the day, the way I like to describe it is that during the day, I spend my time building assets offline in the real world. And at night, I just enjoy building assets on the internet. So I write sometimes, and I build tools sometimes. Sometimes I build tools for writers. Sometimes I write about building tools. I just do stuff that's fun. And I try to do stuff that can sort of behave like an asset on the internet rather than a job. So something that can survive by itself and generate revenue or just generate value in some form, even if it's not generating revenue, without requiring constant upkeep. So I built a bunch of things, and you know, people kind of ask me, well, how are you building and maintaining so many things? And the secret is just, I don't maintain too many of them because I design them in a way where they can maintain themselves. And once the initial phase of building is over, they behave like an asset, not, you know, it's like I own something rather than I'm being employed by that thing. That's what I do. I just build stuff for fun.
Interesting. And some of the things you've built include, for example, Nicheless, which is some sort of like a blog.
The blogging platform. Yeah.
How would you describe it? A blog without the noise.
Status
of
games. Yeah. So Nicheless is an interesting product. I built it purely for myself initially, because I felt, not for myself, but I built it for myself as its primary user, because I felt like the internet needed a space where people could just write without worrying about the backlash or being trolled or just, you know, being ignored as well, because that's also pretty sad. People don't like that. Especially people don't like being ignored publicly. So you don't want other people to know that you're writing into a void, right? And like somewhere in 2020 or so, I think I had dabbled with writing online, and I found it quite useful. It was an interesting exercise. For the first time, I realized that, you know, writing is a lot harder than it looks, but it's also useful. And I figured, hey, you know, I need to write more online. People need to write more online. And one of the biggest things that you know, serves as a drawback for people or something that they're afraid of is, hey, what if I write something that's just crap, and people troll me for it or people just ignore it? And I get, say, zero likes on my post, and everyone can see I got zero likes, or, you know, somebody quote tweets me with like a, whatever, some sort of mean comment, and everyone can see that happening. And Nicheless is just like an answer to all of that, where, you know, yes, you will suck initially, and you might suck later as well. And even if you don't suck, like, you should spend some time writing for yourself, because writing is the same thing as thinking, rather than purely writing for social validation. So Nicheless is a minimalist blogging platform that, you know, has no fancy features, just up to 300 words per post, one image, no fancy formatting, all sort of social comments, whether it's likes or replies, are all private to you. Nobody else can see how many likes you got. Nobody else can see how many views you got or how many comments you got, etc. And it's like a nice space for you to go and vent or to just think, or to just express your thoughts about something. No matter how insignificant, as long as you feel like you want to write because you want to think about that thing, without trying to, you know, please someone else through your work, but rather just do the work for the work's sake. But yeah, that's a long description of it.
Interesting stuff. And other things you've done or you've built include also Read Something Great, most recently, Audio Pen. We're going to be discussing them in more detail, but before getting to the actual assets that you've been building, the interesting bit about your story and that part I already know is that you dabbled with coding at first.
Yeah, I did.
But then you thought this is... You thought to yourself, maybe this is, I don't have the patience for this.
Yeah, I mean, so, I didn't think to myself, I just failed. I just failed.
You failed. And so what did you study or did you like university studies?
I studied economics in university. Okay. So absolutely nothing to do with.
And then you tried learning coding on your own. When was yep. that more or less?
So I graduated in like 2013, then worked for a few years in consulting, then started a company with a co-founder of mine. And both of us were non-technical back then. So all of the tech stuff that we had to build then was like one of us had to figure out how to build it. So I had tried to learn how to code, and, you know, to see if I could do that, failed multiple times. This was back in like 2015. So during that process, I discovered a bunch of no code tools, that were, you know, pretty basic back then. But I made them work somehow, you know, got a website up and running, all of payment gateways, et cetera. And multiple times, even after that, since I moved back home to work with a family business, there have been like many occasions where I've at least three that I can count, and I'm sure there were a lot more, where I've seriously thought to myself, okay, I need to learn how to code so I can build stuff on the internet, and just failed every single time, man. The feedback loops were too long. It took too much time to be able to go from idea to you know, prototype or MVP.
So it's lack of patience. It's like you failed
pretty
because
much.
You don't have the patience for
pretty
it.
Much.
And that's, I was talking to a friend of mine as well, ironically, because we're talking about all that. The guy is also Portuguese, from the people who signed up for my courses. He's also a coder and developer and whatnot. And I'm like, how do you guys do it? Like, I also tried to learn how to code, not necessarily to build stuff, just I wanted to learn. It's, as you said, like, it takes a lot of time and patience,
yep.
and, you know, dedication to sit down to translate or concretize or materialize an idea that you have. And so you threw all that into the trash. And what did you do? Like, you failed as a coder, developer as such, but then you're like, no, I know what I want. I want to build stuff, digital
yeah.
products. So what was, how did you get there?
So at some point I sat down and thought to myself that, you know, there are two ways I can do this. I think this might've been influenced by like one of Naval's tweet threads about, you know, creating stuff online. But he said you could do code or media. If you can't code, you know, make media. So I thought, okay, media, I can't, I'm not very good at like singing or, you know, whatever, podcasting, but I can write, or let me learn how to write at least. Seems like a good way to create media online. So I started doing that somewhere in 2020, and did quite well, started a blog, you know, it grew fairly decently, but discovered somewhere along that road that, you know, this stuff doesn't get easier, man. Like, no matter if I have 10 subscribers or if I have 10,000 subscribers, it's the same amount of work. I've still got to be putting in 10 to 20 hours every week, you know, writing one article. And that's just not sustainable. It's not, I'm being employed by this blog. I don't own this blog. So at some point I was like, okay, media's, you know, like scratch that off the list. Let's figure out another step. And it was somewhere in the start of 2021, I think, that I was like, okay, I've dabbled in the no code space before, back in 2015, all the way up to maybe 17, 18. And I was like, it's kind of obvious that these tools must have improved by now, right? Like, they weren't very good back then, but in all likelihood, they are much better now. So I had like, I just decided, okay, I've got to get to like the bleeding edge of whatever no code is, like whatever the closest to code is that doesn't involve code, that can satisfy my, you know, sort of need for speed with regards to learning this stuff. Let me find out what it is and let me just learn it. And back then I don't know where, maybe on Twitter or something, I just saw a bunch of people talking about this tool called Bubble. And they seem to regard it as, you know, the bleeding edge of the no code world. So I was like, okay, cool. Sounds good. I mean, if so many people think that this tool is worth learning and it's amazing, maybe I'll learn it. So yeah, I enrolled in one of those cohort-based courses that existed during the pandemic. Yeah, I learned Bubble during one of those at the start of 2021. And like after that, I don't think I've definitely not like try to teach myself how to code again. It's like I'm definitely sold on no code as a path to building assets online.
And my cat in the background, I think, just
that's
had
all right. Yeah.
A nightmare. So no, it was yeah. He has those, but this is so. And you started, so you signed up for a cohort course, and then afterwards you started building. Because I discussed this with Jordan the other day, like many people, you know, including myself, you sign up for courses, you want to learn a new thing, and then you don't put it into action.
Yeah. I mean, so I paid a lot of money for that cohort-based course, so I had to bloody put it in action. But
what was the first
that,
thing ever kind of that I tried to build on Bubble?
So I built a tool that doesn't exist anymore. It was pretty embarrassing. Now that I think about it, but it was a tool called Builder Bio, like BLDR.bio, which is basically a LinkedIn bio tool for builders. So my goal back then was during this cohort based course, by the time it ends, I want to have built one tool with Bubble. The simplest tool I can think of that might be useful for people, but I want to build something. I don't want to just, you know, attend lectures and meet people and not do anything with it. So I built this thing. I mean, it was trash. Zero paying users. It died soon after I built it. I shut it down soon after. Without a few, you know, terrible tools that I built early on, I don't think I would have been able to build stuff that I'm building now. And hopefully, like in a few years, the stuff that I'm building now will also seem like trash to me. Let's see.
I mean, obviously, also this is a thing. Like, you need to sharpen your skills, and this is the only way to do it, right? Ship and then iterate. We were discussing mm-hmm. this before, and with the course now, right? Like, you start with an idea, and then eventually it might not evolve the particular product, but then you develop the skills to learn how to maybe do things more efficiently and how to structure things in a way for you on the back end to make sense.
Yep.
So that you eventually are capable of building a product that would run on its yeah. own.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the tricky part about learning anything new, right? Like, whether it's, you know, whether you're learning to play the guitar or whether you're learning to code or learning to write or whatever. It's always about honing your instincts to just grasp the mental models that thing sort of sits on. And that takes time. And it's an intimidating thing to do, because when you're staring at it, it's like this black box. You don't understand anything. You almost learn about it by, you know, the analogy of the people holding the elephant and holding different parts of it to figure out what it is. You're the one guy who's going around this damn elephant, you know, one day at a time, touching its legs here, touching its tail there, figuring out that this thing is an elephant. This is what it looks like. But you have to, and you're doing it blindfolded, but you have to do it. For some things, the elephant is smaller, like no code. Maybe for code, it's a lot larger, so it takes a longer time. But you have to kind of get through that phase. Of going from, you know, uncertainty of what you're looking at to some sort of an idea of this is what the landscape is like and this is how I can navigate it, you know, each time I try to build something here.
Yeah, because wouldn't you say that your trajectory and journey learning and building on Bubble kind of led you from a simple to a more complex kind of application, because as you figure things out now, you're capable of solving maybe bigger yep. problems?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, once it becomes second nature for you as to, you know, how the tool works, you automatically start spending more time on like higher order problems, if that makes sense. You're less yeah. worried about the minor details. And so that leaves it kind of frees up your mental bandwidth to think about more complex problems. And I'm guessing you just keep climbing that ladder as the years go by.
Yeah, because like I don't think, for example, you would have. There's also, you know, the circumstances and the context and how Bubble also evolves. And I also signed up for. I bought your course, the Bubble course, because I was interested in learning how to build on Bubble as well. And the only reason I have not actively pursued it yet is because I honestly don't have the time to sit down and think about a particular problem because there are so many things ongoing at the moment. But I have to tell you that, like, two things. One, I also try to learn coding and failed because I don't have the patience for it. And the precision, you know, you have to be quite precise with the syntax and all sorts of weird stuff going on. And then the other thing is that I honestly learned a lot from your course in a way that helped me absorb what you were discussing now, you know, the mental models, kind of how to properly absorb Bubble and understand the basic framework so that you can go on to build your own stuff. And this is something very interesting because yesterday I attended it was yesterday, like, whom would you rather learn from? Like, this is the Sahil's class yesterday on Daniel. Someone who's experienced or someone who started learning and is, you know, sharing their own understanding. And I think in my case, it's been more helpful to learn from you first before eventually going to more, you know, complex kind of, because you learned it from scratch, even though you took a course, but then you simplify things in a way that makes sense. And I was like, oh my God, that this is like, you got me thinking about certain, you know, the back end and front end and much better than an actual hardcore developer would have.
That's good to hear. Makes sense. Man. I mean, I'm glad that you liked it.
Honestly, like, the course was really, really good. Like, I built I did actually apply it, and I showed you, like, I did actually build the joke randomizer tool. Yeah. I did do that.
Yeah, that's cool.
From A to Z. Like, I finished the entire course and I built the thing along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I had designed it purely, you know, like I said, to get people to understand what the elephant was, right? Like, just, you need to figure out that this is a rough landscape of what Bubble is. And obviously I didn't cover too many advanced concepts and stuff, but I'm guessing people that, you know, have the time and inclination will kind of take that step, that natural step later. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it's the sort of tool that you would learn on the, like, if in my case, because I don't know how you work, but in my case, if I wanted to build something, well, I know how you work now. You'll tell us how you work, but if I want to build something, like, this is the thing, I don't have the patience. I have to sit for a week or two and just give it my all. And because I cannot afford doing that now, then I will never be able to build something, because by the time I learn how to, you know, do the whatever it is, build X, I forget about how to build X. I need to relearn how to build X and then move on to build Y. It's like, so it's sparsed over time. I cannot do it.
I mean, it's impossible for everyone on the planet to have the same amount of time and interest for the same amount of things, right? Like, as long as you found what you like doing, if it's keeping you super busy, so you can't do, you know, you can't discover new things that you may or may not like, that's fine, as long as you already like what you're doing.
But then this is a thing. All these other apps, maybe eventually we can get to them, but the reason why I decided to kind of ask you to do the podcast now is because of AudioPen. And I'll start with a shitty question, because I want to start with the shitty question and then maybe move backward through your process. Like, why even bother, right, with AudioPen? First off, like, what is... Yeah, like, you know, because many people would, you know, those who would think, okay, but why, like, first off, what is AudioPen? And then I'll come back to the cool. Shitty question. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, so AudioPen is a very simple web app that is the fastest way for you to convert messy thoughts in your head into clear written text. What it does is it just records your voice. You can talk to it, you can ramble, you can, you know, say whatever you want. You can even read something if you want to it. And then it'll summarize and rewrite what you just said. And you, like, you know, on the premium plan, you could even tell it how you wanted to write. So for instance, if you wanted to write an essay in the style of, I don't know, Shakespeare, you could talk about a topic, you know, you could just ramble about it, even if it's something about your own life, and it would just write an essay in the style of Shakespeare, or anyone else that it's, you know, it's comfortable writing with, anyone else's style that it's comfortable writing in. Yeah, so it's just an interesting way to go from messy thought to written text. And people seem to like it. I mean, it was an accident when I built it, but yeah, it was a happy accident.
Yeah, and this is, by the way, the shitty question is just for me to see, to get the, you know, like the reason why you might have done that, because many other builders, right? Anyone, even including myself and absolutely anyone who want to build something, they're like, okay, but why would I even bother, right? Or there's already something similar, like, you know, the Google, Apple, whatever, like there are applications that record, maybe you can copy paste it on ChatGPT and they can order it, etc. You know where I'm coming
correct,
from, right?
Yeah.
Like, so if you ask someone else, everyone is aspiring for the idea, the breakthrough, you know, I need to make something big. And then you're here, you're like, look, there's this, there's that. I'll combine them in a way that makes it easy for people to just record their thoughts and come up with an easy text.
I mean, to be very honest, this was a complete accident. I wasn't like thinking about this being a tool on, you know, that would sit by itself on its own website that people would use and stuff. I was just sitting on the sidelines, watching a bunch of people, you know, experimenting with AI. And then one week I just thought to myself, you know, hey, I need to figure out how to build stuff with AI as well. So I applied to OpenAI. I think I had access to their APIs, and then said, okay, let's start building. So traditionally what I would do when I was, you know, when I had these phases of, you know, hey, let's go start building something cool. I would sit down and think about an idea, think through it, figure out if it could work, figure out if I could build it in 3 or 4 days, buy a domain, set up a website, buy a bubble plan, you know, design the database, do all of this stuff, you know, create like complex workflows for people to log in and buy stuff, or, you know, do whatever they wanted to do. And that wasn't really working out because there were a bunch of tools that I built like that were just sitting on the side with not too many users. And I was getting frustrated that, you know, I was spending time and money doing this stuff. And so with AI, I was like, okay, let's not, like, you know, there could be 100 things I could build with this thing. I have no idea what to do. So instead of building these things as standalone websites and buying domains and designing databases for them, I'll just build them on my own personal website. So I have, you know, luisperera.xyz, which is just my own website. I said, I'll just build a page for all of these things where I'll just build multiple tiny tools. That's what I call them back then and still call them, on this site. So no database, no nothing. I'll just put maybe a couple of buttons here and there, some text wherever required. And this thing will just interface with these AI APIs wherever required. So no logins, no payments, nothing. Just like small tools, just to learn how these APIs work, to see what AI can do for me. And so I built like 3 or 4 that week. I think right now I've probably got like 5 or 6 on the site still.
Wow.
AudioPen happened to be one of those tools. It was probably built in like a couple of hours, like the basic version, where it was just a button, you could press it, you could talk, you could, you know, press the button again, and it would just give you a summary at the bottom of what you said. No styles, no, you know, no payments, no, like, no complex features at all. Just that, no saving anything. Just you talk and it gives you text. You can copy paste that text wherever you want. So I just built it, didn't really think that much about it. I announced it on Twitter, like, hey guys, I built this tool, go check it out. And there was traffic on my site because of that. Traffic meaning like whatever, 50, 60 people, not a lot. People jumping through all the, I had built another one called Learn Via Analogy, which is, you know, you just explain a concept and it would teach it to you via analogy. I built one that would have a slider that would, you could tell it an age that you wanted it to explain to your concept in. So you could, you know how you have the explain like I'm 5? I had a slider that went all the way from like, I think 5 to 20 or something. So you could choose the complexity of an explanation of any sort of concept or scientific thing that you wanted to learn. So yeah, there were people jumping through all of these. And then it just so happened that more people were excited about AudioPen than the others. And they were just like, oh man, this is crazy. And I got a bunch of DMs from people being like, dude, this is great. Like, I could use this. I'm going to use this. And I was just like, okay, that's weird. Like, like, what's the big deal? It's just summarizing what you said, man. Because I'm not like someone who uses this kind of stuff very often. At least I wasn't back then. I wouldn't talk to my phone and record voice notes and stuff. So I was like, okay, cool. There's something here. And then it so happened that that week or that weekend rather, there was like, I organized this event called Half Day Build every couple of months, which is just like a hackathon for people to turn up. It's free. A bunch of people.
There's an upcoming event.
Yeah, it's happening this Sunday, actually, in like 4 days. But yeah, people just get together and we try to build our ideas and go from idea to revenue within 12 hours. So I was like, okay, there's, you know, Half Day Build happening on Sunday. I have one idea I wanted to build. But I was like, okay, let me just scrap that, build that before Half Day Build and build this AudioPen thing on Half Day Build because it seems like there is some demand for it. So I just built it, man. I built a fairly basic version on day one. I asked people for money and they gave it to me. And then I was like, holy shit, there's something here. Like, people are giving me money for this. Let me just double down on it. So since then, I've just been like going crazy, talking to people, seeing what they like, what they don't like, just building new things. And the tool has like a ton more features from what it had on, you know, on my website. You can, in fact, compare, like, you can go to my personal website and check out the existing first version of the tool. And then you can use the full version and like see for yourself.
Yeah, and this is like it's kind of, you know, your typical kind of story. I did not intend for this to become like the most successful product I've built thus far, but it so happened by chance that it has become.
It's kind of sad though. I mean, you know, after so many years,
I've been putting all my work and effort. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you think about like, okay, I'm going to have like a good idea brain. I'm going to think about a good idea, do some market research, see what people think and like start something. And like the one that wins is just like this complete random thing you built just to learn something and people seem to like it. So now I just question my ideas. Like all my ideas are worthless. Like there's no point in thinking through an idea. You might as well just build an MVP, see what happens, and then scrap it if it doesn't work.
Maybe this is the best way to go about it because clearly you...
Possibly, man. Possibly.
You tapped into kind of a problem people had and hence my question, right? Like others might... The fact that it's big, it's been an accident, it's not an idea you would have thought about building, right? Yep. It's interesting. Yeah. And something similar happened with Jordan... with whom I recently recorded an episode as well, and he's like, he was trying to solve his wife's problem. And he was like, okay, let me help you save some time and get things more efficiently done. And then eventually he didn't even think it was a product, and eventually it happened. So maybe this is where kind of the small bets approach, it always comes up in discussion, might come in handy, right? You're also, I think, you did buy a membership,
yeah,
or you did, And the idea here is you've always been trying to build things on the side.
Mm-hmm.
You do have your day job, more or less. You're the CEO, whatever XYZ of the family business. And then you start building, or you're interested in building things on the side. And what my question here is, have you ever doubled down on a particular product?
This one, yes. Like for AudioPen, I have.
What happened? Tell me, because I like read something great, nicheless, etc. You've always been... focused on, but then they clearly, as someone who follows you on Twitter, you didn't like put any effort into them more than the very basic kind of, you know.
No, I agree. I think the, like, to be very crude, the difference is just paying customers, man. Like, this is the first time. So Nicheless has no revenue model. I know people are getting value from it, but how much value, I don't know. Read Something Great makes money through ads mostly, not too much. But ads are just an annoying way to make money because you've got to keep, you know, reaching out to advertisers and making sure they're a good fit. And it's just generally you become an employee of the ad agency that's trying to find ads rather than, you know, an asset that's generating revenue for you. So I didn't enjoy either of those two activities. I still love the products, but I don't enjoy maintaining them. I'm not motivated enough to keep sort of innovating on them at the pace that I'm innovating with AudioPen for. Like, the moment you have a bunch of paying customers that actually like your product, and in some cases like love your product, it just like you don't feel the need to sleep. Like, you're just like, screw sleep, I'm gonna build stuff. Like, I'm just gonna keep building and make sure these people keep validating their love for this product over and over again, and talking to other people about it. Yeah, there's no better feeling, man, than a paying customer who DMs you and tells you that, dude, this product changed my life, or it's changed the way I study, or changed the way I interact with people, or write online, or whatever it may be. Sleep is nothing when you have that stuff.
Yeah, so you're doubling down on AudioPen for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, unless I either burn out or something happens that I can't foresee, but I definitely want to just keep going for as long as I possibly can.
Yeah, and recently, for example, you published it on Product Hunt. How did that go?
That went well. I finished top of the day, currently sitting at like product number 2 for the month. There's still, 2/3 of the month left. But hopefully I managed to stay in the top 3. I don't know if I will, but that's my current goal. But went like much better than expected. Like, I expected the day before, I thought, okay, if I can get to 400 votes, I'm good. Because with Read Something Great, I think at the time of launch, I got something below 300 or so. And as of today, it has about 400 on that. But yeah, AudioPen hit like 1,000, and currently it's at like 1,200, which is ridiculous.
Whoa!
So
yeah,
I'm quite happy.
Any progress in like I don't know if you want to share numbers, but then active kind of, or before that, the subscription model, how did you manage that?
I've increased
the numbers of people who signed up so far.
Yeah, so I've increased pricing consistently. Like, as I build more features, I just gradually increase the price of the product as well, both as a way to reflect the value it's creating through like newer features, as well as a way to like indirectly reward early supporters. So for instance, like people who signed up on day one got the lifetime deal for $19. And if you sign up, if you sign up today, it's 99. It's probably going to go up in a week's time. But like, the product back then looked very different from the product right now. And like, it's nice that, those folks trusted me enough with those $19 for a product that was probably worth $19 back then, if not maybe slightly less, I don't know. And for now, I think so because as I raise the price, I think the number of people that buy it has gone down. I think the kind of people that buy it are the right kind. So because the product has a fairly good free plan, where you can use it quite decently. You can, in fact, if you delete your notes, you can use it forever for free, but without any of the advanced features. So you get a very good idea of how it works before you decide whether you want to buy it or not. So the kind of people I get now that purchase the product are people that really, really value it. And those end up being the kind of people that I want to sort of listen to as well. So after they buy it, they give me feedback very often. So I know exactly, okay, these are the top 3 things that people want. These are the top 3 problems that the app has that I need to fix. So yeah, post Product Hunt, I think free signups like tripled on average. Paid signups did not triple, obviously, because pricing went up just before Product Hunt. But in terms of like daily revenue, it's been fairly consistent. It saw a bit of a spike during Product Hunt, but at the moment it's back to being slightly lower than what it was before Product Hunt, but slightly higher than what it was at the start.
Yeah, this is quite interesting. Like, I'm still thinking in terms of the, like, when it comes to, because you mentioned something along the lines of, or the main kind of theme that you've been bringing up is you don't want to become like an employee of that thing. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm thinking about now is, Do you think this is going to be just one of those kind of products that for which you will become an employee because you're constantly now trying to refine it, add features, etc.? How are you processing all that flux?
So my current sort of view on that is that the product is just a little over a month old, and I need to give it a few months to kind of take it to a point where the basics are in place. There are still a few, you know, major things that I need to build that might take me a month or two or maybe three. And I don't want to stop until those are in place. Like, yes, there is a possibility that, you know, there will be another five things that get added at the end of that period, you know, just by virtue of having more customers. I don't know. I hope not. But as of now, I'm going to try and build as much as I can for this initial sort of sprint of taking this product from, you know, hopefully what will end up being escape velocity. I don't know. But currently just burning on all cylinders, man. And then hopefully it moves to like a more maintenance mode once all the big stuff is built. And then I can focus on maybe marketing it or maybe even build something else that complements it, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, this is like, yeah, again, your story is quite interesting because you're building it on a no code platform. You built something clearly useful that has resonated with many people, and yeah, thinking about it and comparing it with, for example, Jordan's kind of journey. This is where I'm doing kind of this synthesis of things. Would you think that you would get to a point whereby you would want to grow it and then just get rid of it? Or would you want to keep it? I know it's still early to discuss all these, but then Jordan's kind of, I don't know if you've seen the clip I shared recently. He was like, you know what, with Closet Tools, in hindsight, I should have got it to a point whereby I sold it and then let other people grow it, because I'm building off of another platform. In your case, you depend by and large on, you know, GPT and stuff like that. Yeah.
No, I've thought about it, like not thought about it deeply enough, to be very honest. But like my surface level thoughts, like I've had people come to me saying, hey, you should sell this. I can help you find a buyer, et cetera, et cetera.
Already? Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of folks. No money or no numbers have exchanged.
But then like the idea is already people are telling you, you know, you should kind of.
Yeah. I mean, so the way I'm thinking about it right now is like I have this bunch of early adopters that has, you know, kind of trusted me with money from their wallets, and they like implicitly they've trusted me to kind of improve the product at least to a particular level where it becomes worth more than what they've paid for. For some people that's already the case, for others maybe not yet, but I feel like I have like this moral duty to kind of, you know, build those features or kind of give back to these people more than what they gave back to me before I can sit and think about whether, you know, I want to sell it or not. I'm definitely open to selling it at some point. It's not like I'm married to the thing, but I don't want to have customers at the end of the journey look at me and be like, you know what, you cheated us. You know, you took our money and you didn't do anything with it. We bought this product that sucked. I mean, not that anyone said that, but like that would be terrible, because ultimately I look at myself as, like I've dabbled in a bunch of things, and like building stuff on the internet is something that I really, really love to do, more than writing, more than building stuff in the offline world, more than pretty much any other professional or revenue generating activity that I've done in my life. So I definitely want to keep doing that. So yes, you can make more money if you sell it, you know, at the optimal time or whatever it may be. But then if you lose trust, you know, during that process, then you don't get to play the game again, or at least when you play it again, it's a lot harder. So I want to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, the app is doing well. People have trusted me, and I need to be sort of grateful for that. Like it's already gone a lot further than I expected it to go, like infinitely further than I expected it to go when it started. So I don't want to be a dick about it. Like I want to make sure that it works so I can keep playing.
Yeah. And again, this is quite interesting. I don't know. Like if I were you, for example, it cut off a bit, but you're back. I would have worried so much about, you know, the feedback and the stress and maybe, you know, the constant kind of pressure to improve things. And what if I don't know how to do that? Or what if it becomes just bigger than what I'm capable of doing? But you're handling it very gracefully, kind of.
I mean, it's quite chaotic, man. Like I respond to customers all the time. Like, I don't know how I do it sometimes, but I figure if it ever gets too much and I'm still in this position, I'll probably hire someone to work with me who can, you know, help me out, whether remotely or in person, either ways. But yeah, I mean, the option is, what if it gets too big to handle? Either you sell it, you shut it down, or you hire someone to do it. Definitely don't want to shut it down. So then it becomes between selling it or hiring someone. For me at this point, I think option number one would be hire someone who can sort of reduce the workload of you know, some aspects of it, and then see where that goes. I mean, it's an experiment anyways.
No, it's kind of a leap of faith, and forget about the selling bit. It's just like the way you're handling it now is it stressful up to a certain point? Are, for example, people asking you for features it's difficult for you to implement now because you haven't learned how to do that?
Yeah, I'm quite honest with people. When they ask me for stuff, I just reply being like, hey, I ran into a technical glitch while trying to build that. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't know how long it'll take.
Okay.
It may take a month, might take 2 months. I have no idea. But see, the thing is, when people ask for features, it's not super stressful. Like, yes, it is a little stressful, but they've paid for the tool without those features. So if I can manage to build those features for them, that's a bonus. It's not that they get angry with me because they can't, you know, have those features. It's just like a polite sort of request from them saying, hey, it would be nice if you could do this. So as long as you kind of reply politely and tell them that, hey, I've got this on my list and here's why I can't do it, or here's why I don't want to do it. You know, maybe because it'll impact the tool in a different way that, you know, might be worse for some users. As long as you're polite and upfront about it, I mean, so far, like, I don't think there's been any customer that's been unreasonably frustrated. Like, yes, it takes a couple of back and forths during emails, like just sending them responses quickly, but so far, at least they've appreciated the fact that I've been honest and at least I've taken the time to kind of respond to them.
Yeah, transparency does help as well. And you're right, like, they didn't buy into it assuming that this is already a feature because you did not promise them something you did not kind of deliver on. Yeah, and on this journey of several years of learning how to build things and how to develop things and how to, like, developing this intuition for what might or what might not work, and you might not even have developed the intuition because
I don't have the intuition.
Clearly it's an accident, of course. But then, like, all in all, what would you say you've learned throughout this journey?
A
few things, like, not like pick one or two, or things that you really value that you actually have gotten the chance to learn, like, in hindsight, maybe whatever it is, anything that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think, like, at a high level, like, I've learned that you have to just keep tinkering until you find something that you like to do, and then, you know, double down on that activity. So for instance, I've tinkered with building a startup in the real world, I've tinkered with writing online, I've tinkered with building offline businesses, done a bunch of stuff, and like building products. I think I've even tried learning how to code, but building stuff with Bubble is like the perfect fit for my life situation as well as my interests. And now I can't see myself doing anything else. Maybe Bubble or not Bubble, whatever it may be, but like building things on the internet without code quickly is just something I love doing. So, I mean, I'm guessing that's different for everyone, right? Like everyone has different interests, but stumbling upon that interest is a journey in itself. And most people kind of give up and then just stick with whatever the default route is for the rest of their life. And that's a pity. I wish more people would take the time to tinker on the side. That's number one. And the second learning is just that it's extremely difficult to make money on the internet. Like, people think it's easy. you know, you have survivorship bias of all the winners talking about it and getting recorded on podcasts and, you know, writing articles about it and whatever. But it's fucking hard. Like, it took me 2 years to make anything remotely close to a living wage, which is just happening right now. Not even 2-3 years. And before that, I was building other stuff in the real world, but just on the internet, like 3 years to get anywhere close to sustainable. Yes, you could get lucky, but odds are you won't, at least initially. But yeah, I mean, if you like what you're doing, whether it's on the internet or elsewhere, eventually, you know, you keep rolling the dice, eventually it'll hit six. You just got to keep playing. And the only way to keep playing is if you enjoy the game and you can survive while playing it.
Yeah, that's an interesting reflection. Like, first, just tinker until you might not necessarily stumble on what you like, but you definitely know what you would rather not do. And this is something I've also been experiencing. Like, I dabble with a few things and then I'm like, okay, I still don't know what I want to do or where I'm heading, but then I know to a certain extent, and so far as I don't do that, I'm good. Like, I would do it if I have to, but then if I can, I would rather not. The other bit is the making, on the one hand, it's very difficult to make money on the internet, but then also showing up every day kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Consistency. Is it like, this is,
I mean, they're interconnected, always, right?
Yeah.
Like, you show up only when you like what you do. Otherwise, like, you're just like, I don't know, man, going through some army drill of sorts, which is just no fun. Unless you've got someone behind you with a whip, you're not going to run. So you have to enjoy it in order to show up, and you have to show up in order to win eventually.
But you have to also enjoy it and show up every day and also not be demotivated by the fact that for how long you said, 2-3 years, not seeing maybe any direct results, monetary or otherwise, and then all of a sudden things start compounding eventually. Yeah. So it's like surviving long enough for you to to eventually
pretty much
make it, right? Correct. It's quite interesting. Because
and it's always nice to do this on the side as well. So I mean, it's very easy to say this, but if someone's, you know, let's say in a situation where they have to, you know, be successful quickly because let's say they have a child that depends on them and they don't have money for it, like, that's a very different situation. Then you're not going to say, hey, dabble and, you know, see if you find what you like. Like, figure out how to survive first. Like, get a job or, you know, do whatever, become a freelancer, whatever it may be. Get that in place and then figure out, like, use your spare time then to tinker until you stumble upon the thing that you want to keep doing. And then keep doing that thing for as long as you can do. You know, you can keep doing it until you win. And then just keep doing it some more, even if, you know, that victory is short-lived.
Yeah, something similar to a book I started listening to just today, Don't Call It Quits. And the argument so far, and this is not directed at absolutely, like, this is directed at a particular kind of group of people. And if you feel like you want to quit your job or whatever it is that you're doing because it's greener on the other side, well, hold on, take a step back. Maybe do other things before you jump into it, because it's very rough.
I mean, it's kind of, it's just the way the media works, right? Like, something I stumbled upon just while being a writer, like, for, you know, a couple of years ago, I realized that, hey, you know, writers are the folks that communicate the best. And the successful writers communicate better than the other writers. And what are the successful writers writing about? Most of them are writing about writing. They're talking about why writing is amazing. And I'm like, hey, these guys have a massive unfair advantage because they're the best communicators and they're talking about their preferred mode of communication. So now there could be, you know, perfectly happy, you know, artist somewhere else who's doing much better than this particular writer, but their mode of communication is art in the real world. It's not, you know, digital art or whatever, that it can't be communicated very easily on the internet. So you need to, like, discount the media, because the media sort of, it amplifies its preferred, or it amplifies its own strengths rather, as a sort of, as a message to people. I don't know if I'm getting that, like, you know, clearly across. But, like, YouTubers will talk about being successful YouTubers. And we watch YouTube, so we think, oh, being a successful YouTuber is the only way to go, which is bullshit. Like, a successful painter is not talking about painting. because he's just painting. So yeah, I mean, that's like on the internet, I got confused with that for a long time. And I have a feeling a bunch of people are still getting confused about that when they spend time on Twitter or YouTube or whatever, TikTok, etc.
Yeah, this is interesting that you bring this up. It's quite, yeah, the fine line between teaching a particular skill and then just narrating your story somehow, like talking about what you do in a way. Like, it's not the same if you take a bubble course where you're teaching how you did it by, you know, explaining your thought process about it versus just saying, oh, look, I built a few things on the internet and you can too.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, this got me thinking about so many things, but I'll stop here because otherwise it's gonna be a rabbit hole. Because I also did a course. I recorded a course like you two can teach online, but then it was more focused on the kind of tools you can use and what you can, like, how to start, what to do. Interesting.
No, I mean, there's nothing wrong with writing about writing. The problem occurs when people that read what you're writing get so convinced that writing about writing is the right thing to do. Right? Like,
that
is a problem. And like, you see that all the time with whether it's writing on YouTube or whatever, like people, like successful YouTubers talking about how to make successful YouTube channels, or like successful Twitter audience builders talking about how to make a Twitter audience. And then selling a course on that. Like, it's ridiculous when you step back and think about it.
See, this is partly why I'm thinking about this, because the latest kind of newsletter I wrote, or it's more than a newsletter, it's just an article I'm writing every other week. I was thinking about this, like, why am I interested in other people's journeys, right? Am I interested in their journeys because I want to mimic what they did? Like, for example, in your case, right? I'm curious about what you did, the decisions that you made, how you got from point, like, from failing how to code to building successful stuff through no code, right? And my conclusion was, like, this is similar to writing about your journey, like doing, making YouTube channels and whatnot. And my conclusion is that I'm interested in this because somehow some of your experiences resonate with mine. And this is what I'm interested in. I'm not interested in following the same path or in learning about your particular journey because I'm trying to mimic it. But a few things about your thought processes and the things that you've experienced somehow are helpful to me in a way.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. It's just that you're fairly seasoned at this point, right? Like, you've been around on the internet for a while. You know how things work. It's like, I've seen too many like young builders or whatever who just think that sort of duplicating people's journeys is the way to go. And that's not true, because everyone has innately like different interests. Your journey should be about first discovering what your interest is, and then figuring out what to do with it, or then figuring out how to play that game. And too many people just don't realize that. Like, I was one of those maybe 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago. So yeah, I mean, hopefully I mean, this podcast helps at least one more person get out of that
I will revisit this when I write the article associated with this particular podcast, because it's quite interesting. And because I know you have to leave in a few minutes, in hindsight, again, if there's one particular thing you would have not done, what would it be when it comes to this building? Like, would you maybe focus on a particular niche, a particular product, a particular conception of a product? Or would you just think, yeah, no, I did niche-less. I did read something great. I built things across different categories. All have been good for me to learn from. Or is there something you wouldn't have, or you would have done differently?
Yeah, I mean, would have not done, I don't know, because I mean, the entire point of failing is that you learn from it. So, I mean, I'm pretty happy with how, you know, where I am right now. So I don't want to, you know, have some weird butterfly effect happen to me by saying something like that. But in terms of like a major approach change that I have now from, you know, what I've learned, especially with, you know, AudioPen, is the whole, you know, building tiny tools bit that I mentioned earlier, where I would just not devote so much time to trying to think of whether an idea is good or bad and how do I design the whole thing, and, you know, putting so much effort behind an idea before executing on it. And I would just build the dumbest version of any possible idea that I could think of just on my own website with zero friction, and just throw it out into the world and see what people say. Maybe put a small feedback form at the bottom of every single, you know, tiny tool that I built, and see if it gets overwhelmingly positive feedback, double down on it and, you know, build it as a separate standalone tool. If it doesn't, then it's fine. It doesn't harm anyone. Yeah, I'd probably do that going forward, as and when, you know, I have to.
Yeah, multiple, extremely multiple small bets, but then with a validation loop to them.
And a small bet that doesn't harm anyone else if it doesn't work out. So for instance, if you start if I had to shut down Nicheless, if it didn't work out, I mean, fortunately so far it's doing okay. But if it didn't, you know, shutting it down would have been a problem, right? Like people have their blogs up there. So I can basically never shut down Nicheless for the rest of my life, which is fine. I mean, I know I can't do that. I knew that before I started it. But like when you're making these small bets, like you have to be cognizant of that fact that your users do not get permanently harmed if your bet fails.
Yeah. You can just call it quits at any moment in time. And also this is, I think, partly why Daniel Vassallo says like lifetime, but in a way such that I can just, you know, pull the plug any time.
Right? Yeah. Like, so when I sell lifetime deals, I mention very clearly that you will have access for the lifetime of the product, not your lifetime.
Yeah. Which I asked you about. Yeah.
If the product lasts 50 years, then great. If it lasts, you know, 10 years, then that's fine too. If you survive for, you know, 100 years, like I'm not going to like make sure the product lives for 100 years. I mean, I wish it does, but I can't guarantee that.
Yeah. Yeah. Luis, thank you very much for this. How can people find you before we?
I'm just Twitter. Like I'm most active there, Luis Pereira. That's Luis Pereira. That's my handle.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was really interesting, and I do have a few other questions. I'll get to them afterwards. After we stop this. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening, and thanks again for joining today.
Cool, man. Thanks, Mahmood. Thanks for having me.